Welcome, welcome everyone. Please kindly mute yourselves. We're so happy to have you for this very, very special program, The Spiritual Experiences of a Lifelong Monk. Thank you for being with us. This is a part of our regular weekly gathering, a Sangha connection for spiritual advancement called Remembering Who We Are. And it is our fourth anniversary of Remembering Who We Are. And we're honored to have a special guest that we've had with us each year thus far to really offer the best that we can to this community and to invite anyone to be a part of this community who is inspired. So the reason for remembering who we are, it actually began with our own need to have a spiritual orientation as an Upbuild team. At our organization, Upbuild, we want to do everything for the purposes of living the life of the soul. And when the pandemic hit, we were thinking, how can we help others during this time of great affliction? And we decided the best thing we could do is open up our own team Spiritual Start to anybody who would be inspired to join us. And so that is what this program is. And they're conversations to help us align with who we really are, not our egos, not our minds, not our bodies, but the real self, the eternal soul. And the intention behind this particular The Spiritual Experiences of a Lifelong Monk is, I have had the privilege of observing Satchinandana, who is my own guru, and seeing just how many incredible experiences he's had, so many that I don't even know about, where they've been a turning point on his own journey to live the life of the soul. And they've given him such conviction, wisdom, and joy and gratitude, and to provide a platform for him to be able to share those experiences with us so that we can gain what he has received. So he will kindly share the wealth with us. And I think it's very, very significant. I'm also super happy that we're recording this so we can document these experiences. I think they're really that special. The format of the program will be officially 1 hour, so 1 p.m. Eastern time at the top of the hour, we will officially close, but Satchinandana Swami will kindly stay after with us to answer questions for a half an hour. So please do stay with us at that time if you would like to and you're able to. It would be great to have you. And this is a five-part series. So he'll be telling us a story that will bring us deep into his own experience, something of the spiritual reality that became clear, vibrant, and essential for him. And that will be for maybe 45 minutes or so. And then, time permitting, we'll have the opportunity to ask questions. And then again, we'll dedicate the after time for those who stay fully to Q&A. That will be for four sessions like that, a particular story, each successive week for the next 4 weeks. And then on the fifth and final week of this series, we will dedicate the time exclusively to Q&A for everybody. And we find that to be immensely valuable to have that chance to interface and to hear answers to important questions on the spiritual path based on what he has shared with us. Please think about questions that you would like to ask while Satchinandana Swami is speaking. Note them down. Everyone, please do this. It will be very helpful. And then you can direct those questions to Michael Sloyer, who is part of our team here. Direct them so it's a direct message in your chat with him. And as opportunity is there, we will call upon you to ask the question of Satchinandana Swami. So please note your questions, direct message to Michael, and as time permits, we will call upon you to ask. A word on the culture that we're creating for this program. We have three pillars that we ask of everyone. The first is your full-hearted participation. When we are hearing, let us hear with open hearts and open minds and with our full undivided attention. Be present. And also have your video on as far as possible, because it creates the spirit of a community. And it's a very different experience for us and for everybody else, the more present we are and together we are. Your respect for everyone in this space. We want to create a really safe and sacred space together, and that depends on how respectful our mood is. And the respect for the teachings that Satchinandana Swami will share with us that are very, very precious. And then lastly, determination. Determination to not just make this a nice time together, which undoubtedly it will be, but to make it something that affects the quality of our lives, that we use as fuel to live the life of the soul. So something should change in us from this experience. And what is required is that we set the determination. That comes from us. I want to be so receptive and to really bring this with me outside of this room. So Satchinandana Swami, who is our guest, he's my guru. He's also a really, really critical guide for Upbuild since the beginning. So much of our existence is completely dependent on him. And he has been such an inspiration, has given us wisdom spiritually and practically for so many years. And from the beginning in 2008, we're very, very honored to have him. He's Zooming with us from Germany, and we have also people from around the world we're very happy to have with us. And he is such a devoted spiritualist. He's been a monk for more than 50 years, for quite a long time. And he has been traveling everywhere to share his wisdom with kirtan, meditation, sacred teachings that affect people in ways that I hope you'll experience today, that I know you'll experience if we're receptive. And so we're very, very honored to have him for these next 5 weeks. And now I'm going to turn it over to Satchinandana Swami. Thank you so much.
It is the greatest joy for me today to address all of you, especially since this forum which we have created allows for a very immersive experience. Not everyone is here who just wants to zoom in and zoom out like many of the online platforms are, but we are here for some serious inspiration. It is conversations
that and Robert Martel just taken. Impact.
Swami is muted.
Satchinandana Swami, you're on mute. I think when we had everyone mute, it muted you as well. So if you can just unmute yourself.
Host, if you unmute Swami, he will see a pop-up window and then click that. It'll be easier.
Yeah, no, I've asked him to unmute, but I think he's figuring it out. If everyone else could please keep themselves on mute while Satchinandan Swami is talking, that would be much appreciated. He is in search of tech help.
Oh, so. Am I audible now?
Yes.
Good. So this was the first obstacle we had to overcome. I am not knowing how to unmute myself. I'm a little different. I'm not a regular. I'm so much on the internet, but I'm not practically handling it. Good. So now everyone else needs to mute themselves so that we have the full focus. it looks like a pilgrimage where we have to overcome obstacles in order to reach our goal. Good. First of all, I want to say that I consider this a very important meeting because we have set it up in such a way that there is something going on like therapeutic hearing. We can hear and something happens in us that facilitates our spiritual awakening, hopefully. So let me start by offering my few mantras. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishtaya Bhutale Shimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pajamine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paskatya Esatarini Om Tat Sat. Already our host has set some parameters that can allow us to enter a deep experience through sharing some spiritual realizations. There is a wonderful precedent in an ancient scripture. The scripture was written by Sanatan Goswami. It was the last work which he composed after perhaps written something like 50 guidebooks for the bhakti path. And he wanted to really put everything into this book, which people in the who would come after him needed to know for their own spiritual journey. And there, he does his teaching, he packs it into a narration. It is about a self-realized soul called Sarup, who meets a searcher, Janashama, and contemplates the means he should adopt in order to awaken or bring a profound awakening in that searcher. When I prepared for my first session, I was also finding myself in this situation. How can I create something on the in a Zoom meeting. This is quite a challenge, where we can't sing and dance and make experiences, where I can't send you down to the river to get buckets of water from the sacred Ganga. How can we, in a Zoom meeting, facilitate something? And this is what he thinks, this Sarup, this teacher. He thinks this a couple of 100 years ago, where he was struggling with the same question which I had. He contemplates thus. This person has already everything in his power to move forward. And yes, there are many relevant instructions that I could tell him that help him to move forward. I could quote the Puranas, I could quote the Gita, and so on. But I think the very best is I tell him of my own history, that which I have learned on my own spiritual journey. So as he thinks like this, this teacher, remember this is a few hundred years back, a doubt comes into his mind. He says, describing one's own achievements is disapproved by all spiritual authorities. And he quotes a text, Sva prashansha roho mrityo. Self-praise is as good as death. My dear everyone, I do know in the world when we want to get a new job opportunity, we may have to talk about how we are so expert in our area and so on. But in the spiritual field, self-praise is worse than death. Why? It is said when you talk about your spiritual accomplishment or achievements or realizations, they will be taken away the moment you bring them out of your heart and expose them to the public. Much like a light of a candle is blown out by the winds when you bring it out of your room and into the open space. But then he says to himself, I think in this case, nothing else I could say will bring about the good fortune of this person who has come to me. And he reasons like this. Of all forms of evidence for establishing the truth, experience from one's own life is the strongest. I will play you at the end a beautiful video from Carl Gustav Jung, who's our neighbor. Switzerland is just the next country to Germany. So thus, when Gop Kumar frankly reveals the events of his own life, this searcher who came to him should be persuaded of the higher truth that Gop Kumar has grasped. And then a beautiful work, literary work, commences. It's full of experiences on the spiritual path. And in the end, after many, many pages of Sanskrit poesy, there appears the following verse. By the mercy of that great soul, you know, that Sarup who was sharing his own experience, everything he had experienced became manifest at once in the heart of the seeker as if he had experienced it himself. Such is the most amazing effect of contact with a spiritually minded person who shares his experience. Yes, some association with materialists can create further bondage, but other association can open the path to perfection. So I sincerely hope, although I'm insignificant and you are all very invested in your spiritual path, you are already advanced souls. I talked a few days ago with our hosts about you, and they told me how sincere and serious you are on your spiritual path and how you have gone very deep. And I'm not talking to a group of beginners here. No, you are all accomplished in your own ways. Still, I do hope that as we talk, and in the next session, we will also have a guided meditation. As we talk and meditate about these subjects, you will experience something in your heart that will help you to make the decisions you need to make now at this particular stage of your life to go to your next level and move on. Today, I want to share with you a powerful principle which I experienced, principle of divine reciprocation. My hope is that as you understand this principle from a most impactful experience that I made at the banks of the Ganga, I hope that you will apply this principle in your own search for spiritual advancement or progress. Before the session, I wrote down that what you look for looks for you. We all look for true self, perhaps, or others look for the Supreme Being. On the spiritual level, there is a law of reciprocation that manifests in this little sentence, that what you look for actually looks for you. So you come from both directions. You come from one direction, and the truth comes from another direction. And at one stage, they meet. This is the beauty of a genuine spiritual path. Another principle which we will be operating with and looking at is Krishna will raise everyone into his divine presence who always thinks of him. We are something like caterpillars. When we are in tune, when the caterpillar is in tune with his inherent biological possibility, it becomes a butterfly. So if we start to think of the divine as we move through our life, our inherent possibility opens. It is in Sanskrit poetry, it is said that the caterpillar constantly meditates on being or becoming a butterfly. So the person in this world constantly thinks about God and then is raised by the Supreme to a level of closeness. But he has to think of him like the caterpillar who is thinking of, we would perhaps in our Western mind say, he's in tune with its biological possibility, and it becomes a butterfly. What I want to share with you will require a little respect on your side, because it is so out of the normal New York experience. He said, really? No, sometimes we have very spiritual experiences in New York, but I mean, it's so outside the rational perspective of things. I was given a book by one of the participants here, where the author, Simone Weil, challenges us to think out of the box. And I want to read her quote. She says, "The intelligent man who is proud of his intelligence is like the condemned man who is proud of his large cell." So when we listen to our spiritual experiences and spiritual principles, we are challenged to move out of our own large cell. The intelligent person is a little bit more able to consider more parameters perhaps than someone who's struggling with his intelligence. But it's still a cell. It's a place of confinement. So that is broken, or was broken for me, with this law of divine reciprocation. When I was much younger, the world was much younger, perhaps I had just reached my 40th birthday, a birthday which our host will reach in a few days or weeks. I went on pilgrimage to the Himalayas. I had been there when I was in my 20s, in my 20s, and had always remembered the majestic mountains. But more than anything, I had remembered the echo of the Ganga, who rushes and froilicks through the valleys of the Himalaya. And I wanted to go there by making a cut, or I think one says cut in English, in, you know, taking a distance to my life and getting some alone time with me and the object of my worship, the Lord. And I was looking for lonely places in the Himalayas, but also went to one of four very celebrated pilgrimage places. They're around, I think, 4,800 meters high. My place of my destination was Bararikashrama. It is said that all spiritual people in the Indic traditions go one time in their life to Bararikashrama, because it is said that it is here where the divine and the profane, and the transcendental and the mundane meet. In this meeting point, it is there the divinity manifests and answers our questions. So here I am, a jeep with full with two other friends and my sleeping bag and my luggage. and we arrive at Rudra Prayag. After checking in into Dharamshala, you know, it's a place where you can, in New York English, crash out. Very, very humble rooms are there, of poorly furnished rooms. I took the long staircase down to the confluence of the two arms of Ganga. I still remember when I had gone halfway down, it was a long staircase. I came to a little temple that was in the middle, and I rang the bell, and the bell was very loud to my ears, and the sound of it was foreboding trouble, I still remember. And as it turned out, this was almost the last sound which I heard this word. I was, you know, I think it's called in English a premonition, some hint in your mind that something frightening is happening to you. That was spelled out in the sound of that bell, which sounded in my ears as if you take sandpaper and rub it over a glass. Yeah, icky, it sounded. So I went down to the Ganga. I remember at that time, a little away on a rock, there sat a Brahmana who was chanting Sanskrit verses. It was clear he had just taken his bath in the Ganga. So I put my cloth a little away from him and just had a little tower-like thing around the hips. And I went into the close, let me say, the still water, which was parted off by a railing, an iron railing from the Ganga, who was shooting by. I can only express it like this, with high waves, with foam, with a loud noise outside of the railing. So that was a little bit in an enclosed portion of the river where the water was quite still. And somehow or other, I cannot tell you why and how. Maybe I should say I was tired. Somehow or other, I decided to take my bath outside of the railing while holding on with both hands at the railing to not be grabbed by the swift current. In the past, I had already, you know, when I was a young man, around 20, in my 20s, I had gone into the Ganga, and I remember as I was going inside the Ganga, I saw on two logs of wood a yogi coming down the Ganga. It almost looked like water skiing, only that the logs of wood were like substantial trees, you know, and somehow he held them together and he was riding down. It seemed really unearthly. He was floating over the Ganga. And I was so totally amazed that I just stared at him and I lost my ground. And then although the water was only perhaps hip deep, the Ganga had still grabbed me and pulled me along, and I was badly bruised. I remember when I finally managed to climb out, my legs were bleeding, and I needed to go to the hospital. So I had seen already the awe-inspiring power of Ganga, although I had only seen it in shallow water. It was little higher than knee deep, not hip deep, but little higher than knee deep. So there was no reason, which I can find in my mind, why I should climb over the railing and grab onto the railing. Those who know me know that I'm a little enthusiastic, but I'm not unreasonable. So I had totally, entirely underestimated the powerful grip of Mother Ganga, who turned into a very stern mother. She pulled so strong that I lost my grip on the railing. I remember now, and I'm happy I'm sitting here before you all. She grabbed me, she tumbled me around, almost like a shirt perhaps that is put into a washing machine and which is tumbling around once the machine is activated. And then Mother Ganga, as I like to call her, should I call her the stern mother, fierce mother, carried me away. And, you know, there's masses of water, tons of water. I was going under and I was sometimes coming up and I was clearly moving perhaps to the North Pole or far away from India, so far away. And it was a huge, broad river. So I do remember, first I was totally shocked. Then I thought, this is the end of the chapter which we call the life of Satchidananda Swami. And I called out almost from, not really thinking about it. I called out the mantra which I have chanted all my 50 years now, which contains the names of the God, Hare Krishna. And I really called out very loudly, resigning my fate into his hand. I was really frightened. And I remember all I knew is, don't stop shouting the divine names, because I do know that there is this promise that Krishna will raise to himself those who remember him by calling out his name. Everything else left me. My education, my German reservedness, my hopes in life, only this was left. And I don't know how long it took, but then I see this huge wave that comes over the current of the Ganga. Let me show it. How do I do this? Let me say, this is the Ganga shooting me in one direction, and Well, it's the other direction this wave comes. Like this. And the wave, the second wave, which flows over the current, grabs me with a similar intensity, makes me tumble the other way around. I don't know if it was the other way around. But I only remember I was also tumbling and spinning. And then washes me swiftly to the railing. And as I come to the railing, remember the same railing to which I was holding on, there are about four strong, well-built men who grab me and pull me over the railing. I wish they would have done it softer because I also scraped my leg on the railing, and there was a little blood, but unsubstantial amounts of blood. I'm then in the shallow water, and I somehow managed to say, Dhanyavad, thank you. And all I knew, don't stop chanting. And I went up, and then I meet this Brahmin. Remember, I had put my cloth just a little bit away from him down on the rock. And he had gotten up, and he started to, when he saw me, he started to break out in a very well-known Sanskrit verse, Baha Pitam Natavara Kanikanayo, which means carrying a flute in his hands. The sweet Lord is ever active in giving pleasure to his devotees. So he says in English, I could understand, it was a little Indian English, saved by Krishna. He embraced me, and he indicated that this, he had never seen something like this, that I was in the midst of this huge current of water. My assistant is at the moment in another call. I actually wanted to show you this raging river of Rudra Prayag, but perhaps when the call ends, I can find if the call where my assistant is ends, I can show this, or I would love to show it the next time. You won't believe it was not supernatural. It was super, super, supernatural. It was an intervention from the more than human world. It was clearly he whom you search for is searching all the time for you. It was a case where I saw a law of divine reciprocation that I've never seen in that way. The next, the Brahmana invited me for the next day to take lunch with him. So I remember the next day I went over a hanging bridge, quite adventurous, to the other. I crossed over the river, which had almost taken my life, and then came on a narrow little path, and he came already from his dwelling, his house, to greet me. And he then pointed down from the path. I saw the banks of the Ganga, the stones, and he said, see, here on the banks we have brought the ashes of my father. You were yesterday meant to also leave your body. I could see that, and I have done my astrological calculations this morning, but there was a divine you. And yes, this Brahmana was so convinced, he traveled with me for the entire 3 weeks of my pilgrimage in the same jeep. We made space for him. He was a very accomplished person, and he had invited himself. So you don't say no to a saint when he invites himself. So he had also been convinced by seeing what I experienced. Yesterday he said to me, "I thought you would be gone, but I think Krishna told the Ganga to save you." My dear everyone, when we see such things or experience such things, our belief in God comes to an end. We don't believe any longer in him because we know that he's there. I would like to finish this by asking Vipin to play one very interesting little, it's only I think 1.5 minutes long, interview from Carl Gustav Jung. I do not know how you pronounce it in American English, Sigi Young. It's very nice how he speaks and so on. Vipin, can you please put the little movie for our guests in? Yes, there he is. We can see, but we cannot yet hear.
No.
I will read it to you in the voice of Sigi Jung. So he is asked, please start, Vipin.
You want me to play it again? Sorry?
Yeah, and I will just read it for everyone because it's really nice.
Okay, sure. Could you not hear the audio?
No, I couldn't hear, but perhaps the others could hear.
Oh, okay. Sorry about that. Let me just try one more time. Let's see if that works. If not, but you can.
Did you believe in God?
Oh, yes.
Do you now believe in God?
Now?
Difficult to answer. I know. I don't need to believe. I know.
Yes, that is a very heart-moving. Perhaps, Vipin, you can share this little movie because it has nice music, and it's really, when you hear such a person who's such an intellectual or also spiritual.
Do you believe in God? Oh, yes.
Sorry.
Do you now believe in God?
It's all right. We don't have to be technical giants. Here you see from Vipin, you can look at it in your own time. Good. Fine. So I will end here. And according to our time calculation, we have 10 more minutes for the official question and answer period. And I request you to remain with me for these 10 more minutes. And then, according to your availability, you can either stay on or sign off. I would suggest that Hari Prasad, at the end of these 10 minutes, you can just say goodbye to everyone. And then, how do you say? Then we go on. Fine. So this was my little experience in the grip of the stern mother. And I wanted to share that with all the drama that was involved. I could not process very much. All I knew at that time was that all my philosophy, everything had fallen, how do you say in English, sloppy dead. I couldn't remember anything. It was gone. But I remembered this one thing, that chanting the names raises us unto him, either in this life that we are miraculously saved, or it can also mean it raises us. I could have also left this body at that time and moved on in my journey. I feel I got a second lease on life at that time. Good. So let us see if there are more questions like this, or more questions. Please ask your questions now.
Satchinanda Swami, I'm going to ask a question if that's okay. So first of all, thank you so much for sharing that experience. And my question is, you said you knew clearly that it was God who saved you from the river. And I was wondering, how did you know clearly that it was God? And then also, if we're thinking about applying that to our own life, when something happens like that, that feels miraculous, how do we know that it's God?
Some events that are sent into our life carry a very clear address of the sender. Look at this letter. It was sent to me. And here you can see it has the name of the sender and the WhatsApp number where I can respond. When you have an experience where everything in you tells you this is not chance, this is not due to other factors, you are deciding this usually from a place of knowing that is deeper than your rational intelligence. The rational intelligence can doubt God and his existence in this world very easily. And it can ascribe everything that happens to other causes. But your heart intelligence will know. And when it is a divine address, so to say, a divine sender from which this event comes, it just knows it. Let me hear, because your question is so important, and I have not seen your face, but from the voice, I think it's Michael, isn't it? Michael, am I correct?
Yes, it is.
Oh, wonderful, Michael. In scripture, there are three parameters by which you see that it is that something has come from God. One is it is Parishanu Bhava, and the third one, Parishanu Bhava and Virakta. Parishanu is a direct experience where you see the Lord or his hands. I think I saw his hands, not in form of hands, but his arrangements. Then there is a bhava, a certain feeling that is always coming up when you are touched by divinity. It is a different feeling than if you are touched by something else. And now listen, please, to the third. You feel in your, you know, you perceive in your existence a healthy state of a detachment from material life when that divine experience is happening. So you see something with the heart, you do have a certain feeling of being overwhelmed, and you finally feel a sense of detachment. I think you are a father, and if you would imagine you would be in coma, God forgive, but if the person who loves you most would touch you on the chest or in the heart, by that touch you would understand, and often wake up out of the coma. So in the same way, in a deeply spiritual experience, the touch of the divine is so palpable and so different, just like the touch of your good wife is or your child is different from any other touch, even a doctor touch. In the same way, the touch of the divine is different. But it is, let me say, spirituality, Michael, will always be a subjective experience. The objective mind of an outsider to this experience will not be able to understand this, much like the an outsider will not understand the special healing effect of the touch of a beloved unique person, the child or the wife, and so on. So, yes, the touch of the divine has a similar quality to it. It is, you know it. This is a, but our Michael, with whom I had such good discussions, and look forward to discussing more, is touching on a very sensitive and important issue. A spiritual experience is always a touch of the divine, and it has always a very transformative effect on the one who is touched by it. It is a highly personal thing. It is like perhaps the drawing, you know, that God finger comes in the Sistine Chapel, you know, and the man's finger is there, and then boom, the touch happens. It's a very special, a unique, highly distinguished touch from all other events that may touch you, and so on. There are, however, a few parameters which I think for an intellectually trained mind are more satisfying than telling him this touch is something which the one who is touched knows. When there's a divine experience, not coming from other reasons, you, time seems to stop. There's no time any longer. I must also say, when I was in the counterwave, let us call us, I don't know how long I was being carried through the Himalayan mountain. It was just so exciting and so exhilarating. I have not really talked about this in so much detail because I wanted the narration to be over, but I realize I should have talked about it. Michael, time had stopped. The material perceptions was no longer there. It is also the touch of the divine makes you always totally, how would you say this? It doesn't make you happy. It makes you blissful. It's an experience beyond happiness and safety and refuge and so on. You are clearly beyond the normal states of the mind and so on. Yes, it is inexpressible by words. Therefore, yes, this experience, I have only told you what happened outside. I was carried by the inconceivable wave back to the railing. But really what happened inside my perception, it is words in the mind never reach there. And the last one of these four parameters is entirely transforming. It still is with me. It is still, it has made me very fearless in my life. Although I'm a little elderly now, but I do not know many boundaries because I'm, of course, I don't do anything irrational, but yes, I do not walk the regular paths because I know called or not called, he's always there. Yeah. Does this satisfy your inquiry to some degree of satisfaction?
It does very much.
And I want to remind you that I will now give away a well-kept secret. Both Michael and Vipin are Ganga boys. We went last year to a valley at the banks of the Ganga, and we had a wonderful experience when we went into the Ganga. It was so prickling cold, but I remember the two of them were not easily convinced to get out of Ganga because they were also touched by something divine. They stayed very long, although it was so cold. it's really ice cold up there. Good. Yes. So let us, oh my God, we are already over the five, we are already 7 minutes, seven or 5 minutes after seven. Hari Prasad, it's you to say how we continue and so on. Please switch yourself on.
Thank you so much, Satchinandana Swami. We're thrilled that you share with us as you have. And it was very reminiscent of an earlier series that we did with you across 2 years, On the Brink of Death. You were truly on the brink of death and had such a divine spiritual experience that is fitting for this series as well. That is the intersection between the two. And I'm so appreciative that you share with us. So everyone who needs to leave, you are officially welcome. If people had to go, that is understandable. But now we wish you a wonderful week and to be back with us next week and to bring anyone else that would be interested in this program to have that same opportunity. And for those of you who can stay with us, please do. This will be the time to ask your questions. So you can share your questions with Michael now. And for the next 20 plus minutes, we will continue. Thank you so much. Okay, I think Ghislaine has a question. If you're able to stay, Ghislaine, would you ask your question?
Yeah. Thank you, Hari Prasad. Thank you, Sachinanda Swami, for sharing your wisdom. I asked this question to Michael before hearing what you shared, but it was essentially if you might share some of what was transformed within you. How you were changed by being touched by a divinity, so beautifully stated. Whatever wisdom, whatever pearls, whatever comes to heart and mind to share, would be most honored. Thank you.
Yes. I think all of us at one stage of our life are looking for a change. Change to a better version of ourselves, where we could perhaps shake off those things which bother us, like a horse that shakes off the dust and is free from the dust. So these transformations, they are called in philosophy, which helps a person to fundamentally change are possible transforming agent, the strength of the divine. I would like to give you an example which is just happening on my desk. Everything goes well, yes. When I work, I have always a light, a candle, fire, because for me, fire is a transforming agent. If I would, for instance, hold this metal thing into the fire, it would experience a transference of energy. It would start to glow after some time. In much the same way, Ghislaine, when you are in touch with the fire, the transformative fire of the Lord, there is a great transformation happening, not due to your own strengths, not due to your mental or intellectual capabilities, but purely by the contact of this divine energy. I would like to give you an example that I really experience on a daily basis, also today. I was, I needed to go today to a doctor for an important injection, vitamin B12 injection. A blood test showed that I'm really critically deficient of this vitamin. And after this, I asked those who had driven me to the doctor to let me out and walk a little in the nature and chant in the nature. And I was finding myself a bench. There was wind around me. I was all alone in the place where we are. And I was chanting my mantras and praying. And there is a certain turning point or a switching point where you do know that now there is an intervention, a divine intervention in your life. And it happened also today when I tried to absorb myself entirely. I could definitely see, feel that my consciousness was uplifted in a way that that is just wonderful. It, the scriptures ask the question, what makes the soul rise? And the answer is the kripa, or the divine mercy, gives the soul wings to fly. So what we exactly feel when we shift in our consciousness from a material to a spiritual consciousness is described in various scriptures. You can really see, is it happening, or is this just a form of happiness that can perhaps be induced by other factors? But no, what is happening there is a divine perception, this opening up. The emotions are totally freed from worldly concerns, and you do develop this thing which is so happy, so important for a modern person, the ability to step back and look anew from a healthy distance. When you can step back, time seems to expand, and you get insights that were previously not with you. So this is a good. This is happening every time. So when I was asked to share my experiences with all of you, although I have today spoken about something almost a little sensational, just to narrate something, but I think the greatest experience is the transformation of consciousness. My spiritual master was once giving a program in India, and he was asked, Swamiji, can you show a miracle? In India, you find many god men. Some can walk over water. Some can manifest from the palms objects, like a jewel perhaps, or what's it called? Pomegranate fruit, or anything. So the question was, Swamiji, can you show a miracle? A miracle, as you know, is an extraordinary and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws and is therefore attributed to a divine agency. You know, you can't explain this. So my spiritual master smiled, and he pointed at his Western disciples, and he said, they are my miracle. They were before in one state of consciousness, one level of life, and then they had transformed their life entirely. So it is this transformation of consciousness, which I think is at the heartbeat of spiritual experiences. Not every one of you is expected to fall into the Ganga and then be saved by a counterwave. That is not necessary. Perhaps it's not required. It would not be good if all of you now get in bathing suits at the banks of the River Hudson and jump into the Hudson and expect a miracle. What is the miracle? Is the or the spiritual experience at its core is a transformation of consciousness.
Thank you. I think this is a great segue to a question from Sid. Sid, would you be able to get on camera and kindly ask your question?
Yes, so thank you for the wonderful talk, Sachinanda Swami. My question is...
I know you! like I know so many of you. Sorry, I could not share. It was for me a great pleasure to see so many known faces. But please ask your good question, Sid.
Yes, so my question is, you spoke about how, yes, not everyone can or is willing to be swept away by the Ganga or the Hudson in such a dramatic fashion. So how do we then in our own practical, average New York City lives seek out and have those spiritual experiences that do transform ourselves?
Let me answer your question by asking you another question. Sid, have you already built your treehouse? What is this? every German boy, perhaps not nowadays, but of my generation, knew to build a house in the tree where only he or perhaps his closest friend was admitted. No one else came in that house. So I believe very strongly you can make spiritual experience if you create in your life a tree house that is a place and a time where you are alone and not distracted from your 1008 distractions and worries and so on. And this little technique is so important to learn in spiritual practice. Divine experiences are not happening if you join a spiritual movement. Divine experiences are not necessarily happening when you perform a spiritual process, a religious process like meditation, yoga, chanting, and so on. Divine experiences happen when you have that time with God. I feel in the experience which I shared with all of you that everything was stripped away from me at that time, including my hope of life. And I turned at that time to the object of my meditation, of my worship, and so on. And there was nothing in between any longer. And perhaps more important, I was out of the way, the ego. I had resigned myself. And it is then, when you are out of the way, in that moment of that feels like eternity, where you are able to receive. And that was happening in this moment where I was my body and my tumbling and my mind was tumbling around like a shirt in a washing machine. There was this moment, strange as it sounds, this moment of stillness. And if you can create, if you can, you must learn how to create that stillness in your life. It is necessary to have a life that facilitates that. Thank you. So you need to build your treehouse. By the way, this gentleman's name is much nicer than Sid. It's Siddhartha.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bruno.
Thank you so much. That was such a wonderful teaching. I had a question about how you started your conversation. How does one share from personal experience to help illustrate and teach while we avoid crossing that line to self-praise?
Very good. Very, very good. Your good name, which shows up here, is Bruno Del Ama. Am I correct?
Perfect.
Wonderful. Bruno, let me share with you something that I learned over the years. It is not without some hesitation that I share it, but we wanted to create a forum here that is transparent so that in the beginning of my monk life, I saw the same needy ego reaching out to get public validation or validation from others. Not because now, no longer because perhaps I was the fastest runner or the most adventurous traveler. No, but perhaps because I was the most austere monk or so. And at one stage, I noticed, Bruno, that I'm still captured, even though I had changed my dress and my name, by the ego who wants this validation. Only as I progressed in life, and I think this is perhaps the blessing of maturation, also perhaps the blessing of becoming older, I did notice that it's not about me. I'm not this narrative which I have worked so hard to establish, this narrative about myself, this chapter which I've worked so hard to write in the book of my life. This is me and mine and so on. It is an illusion. And at that time only I could develop what is such an important value in spiritual life. Humility. Humility here is something like a detachment from the need to be glorified, and so on. And whenever I see that this old ghost is again entering my life, as soon as I spot him, I say, "You're not welcome here. You are that person who walked with dirty boots through my consciousness. I don't want you to leave your traces of mud in my consciousness." In my new book about meditation, I quote a poem. It is not written by myself. I will try to remember it by heart. I cannot guarantee that I remember all the beautiful lines. It says, "I'm not I. I'm the one who's standing beside me, who strives to forgive when the other eye is angry and looking for revenge. I'm that person who try to counsel the I that I'm not. And I am that person who stands when the other eye falls down at death." In spiritual life, we have to come to that real or true self that is different from that needy, constantly hungry ego that is spoiling so many things in our life. Bruno, my advice is try to look for association with people who are free from that ghost of the ego, because then you quickly notice when it wrecks its ugly head, when the ego shows its ugly head, and you don't like it any longer. Yeah. I thank you very much. I have seen you also, Bruno, I believe, in a previous call. It was a great joy to see known faces again. I'm looking now at my wristwatch, and I see we are coming close to the end. And I must say, I still have some things to do this evening. So I think we should end on time. Hari Prasad, I will request you and the other three hosts, Vipin, Michael, Rasanath, to just quickly come so that we have just a little a team meeting, but brief, as we always do. So please tell me how to do this. I mean, I will tell my assistant then to put it there. For now, I will say goodbye to every one of you. It was a great joy. Such a forum, I must say, because you are such wonderful people, such sincere people. How do I know? Well, I know a few of you, and I can feel it, you know, even through the computer, that there is such a good atmosphere. It helps me also to reflect things clearly. Thank you very much. May you have a wonderful week ahead of you with many blessings and perhaps some spiritual experiences. I'm saying goodbye to all of you. Hari Prasad, please end the call.
Thank you so much, Sachinandan Swami. We can't thank you enough, and we're so happy that we get to have you for the next 4 weeks. Thanks to everyone for being with us, for all that you bring. We'll see you next week.